So we landed there in La Paz and went to a hotel. Well, we were told to go to bed for 4 hours so as to sort of adjust ourselves to it. Well, we got along real well. After the 4 hours, we got up and walked uptown. Didn't seem to have any discomfort. Then we took the train the next day to Potosí. This is La Paz, the capital. And there is a lake that is, they call, the highest freshwater lake, navigable body of water in the world. It's over 12,000 feet. In that section, being in a semi-tropical region, why, you do not have the cold that you would have in same elevation in this country. So we left La Paz. Well, the rail line runs down through there, and that's the main lifeline of the nation. The roads are impossible in the summertime because it's a rainy season. And while they have a so-called international highway, it is more or less just a myth. There are no bridges on it, and you always have to ford the streams, and sometimes it even goes down the beds of the stream for its roadbed. So when it starts to rain, it's simply out of commission. So, the time we were there, they said that they had some of the heaviest rains on record. And there were numerous washouts on that railroad. But it did not interfere a great deal with our travels. So we left there and we came going to Potosí. Well, that's on a branch line. Well, we were in a Pullman, and right in about halfway there, and there is the highest pass in Bolivia, a little short of 16,000 feet. Well, it was an early morning when we went over that, and we stopped just near it. The dining car crew got out and replenished their water from a mountain stream nearby, and well, the first that time I went over, I didn't feel very good. My head felt a little dizzy, stomach a little upset, a little weak. But went on through, though. Well, I went back over it 4 days later, and it didn't just bother me at all. Well, in Potosí, it's about 13,000 feet, and there were a couple of brothers there. Well, we stayed there over the Lord's Day, and then we went on down to Uyuni, about in the center there. This section here is what they call the Department of Potosí. There are subdivisions they call departments. In Argentina, they call the subdivisions provinces, and I believe in Brazil, they're states. Well, they had a nice meeting room there. They had built out of adobe block. It was out in a poor section of the city. There was no water or sewage, and pigs roamed the streets. They had a Sunday school, though, of about 25 or 30 children. Well, we were nearing the end of the year, so we left with them a little bit of money for a treat for the children. Well, when this brother came over to Lima, he told us, he said they had the treat, and the children passed the word around. He says, now instead of having 25 or 30, we have 100 children come to our Sunday school. Well, we went on to UNE, and we used that as a center. It's a railroad center. And our brother Lino Bueno lives there. He is the one that has that Jeep. He's one of the oldest in Bolivia. He's 68 years old. And he has one eye and one hand. As a young man, he thought it would be, when he was drunk, he thought it would be fun to set off a stick of dynamite. Well, it went off before it got out of his hand. So he lost that one hand, he lost an eye. But it was sometime after that, though, that he was brought to the Lord. Well, he has a nice pastoral care and has been used in the gospel. But he is unable to drive that Jeep himself. He has to have someone else drive it for him. Well, we have stayed. Then it was on the 16th that of December we arrived there. And then we had a meeting had been arranged down here at Tokola, which was Eric Smith's old home place, the last place he'd lived when he was there. And I will say that Eric, I greatly admire him for what he's passed through, the way he's gone down there and lived like those people did, accepted their sanitary conditions. And in one sense of the word, he has, I believe, a rather remarkable gift as an evangelist, and the way he's able to meet people and go on with him. And the Lord certainly has blessed him. It was while we were there at that place eating one day, we had a few days' meetings there, why, one of those brothers spoke up and he said, if it hadn't been for Eric Smith, we'd still be savages. Well, there was this brother, Don Francisco. He met us at the railway station and took us up over a mountain range till we got to Tokola. We arrived about in here and he took us over into there. Well, we had, say, a few days' meetings there. They were 5 days. And there was the old adobe schoolhouse where his wife Trudy had taught these people, and we had our meetings in there. We had meetings in the morning and the afternoon, and we allowed the local brethren there, though, to take care of the gospel, because they can preach the gospel just as well as we can, and they know their people. They said there was 10 professed conversion there. Well, there was, I remember seeing a couple of women coming across on burros, and they said one of them was a noted character in that neighborhood. Her health was ruined. She was an ore grader in the mine. And she realized her time was short here and she wanted to be saved. Well, she couldn't walk, but somehow or other they got her on this burrow and they brought her there. Well, those local brethren, they prayed with her and she professed salvation. Well, it was there that I met a man that saved Eric's life about 10 years ago. And at that time was a Catholic living next door to Eric. Well, one day he noticed a peon that was working for Eric. He was drunk and he was working his way up toward Eric's home. Well, this man knew that there wasn't any good purpose of his going up there. So he grabbed up a big whip, what we would call a black snake, what they use on animals, and he followed that man. Well, this man, when he got to Eric's door first, why, he first tried to choke Eric. Eric and Trudy were sitting right there. Well, I suppose he was so drunk he just couldn't do it. And so there was a rifle sitting there. Eric sometimes had to live by his rifle, that is, provide for his sustenance. And this man had just picked up the rifle when this other neighbor arrived behind. Well, he brought that black snake down on him 3 times. Well, it took all that out of him. He fell down on his knees and begged for forgiveness. And Derek has shown remarkable grace in that way, and he forgave that man. Well, I don't think he ever had any more trouble with him. He continued working for him. Well, this neighbor, he left the Catholic Church shortly after that, and he was in one of the denominations. But he came there that morning, and they wanted to break bread. Well, the brethren all knew him, so he did break bread. His wife and his oldest son, they all seemed to be very nice Christians. And I was amused that his wife, she didn't have a head covering. Well, Jimmy spoke to her about the head covering, and she says, "Yes, because I know that, and I agree with it," but says, "I forgot it." Well, I was amused at her to see how she took care of the situation. She sat right across from me in the meeting, and her husband, he had a hat, sort of a fedora with a crush in it. Well, those Indian women, they wear hats that look almost like men's hats, but what she did, she just took her fist and rounded out that hat, and she put it on. Well, it didn't look much different from the what the other women were wearing. And it showed a nice objection to the word. If you do that, I might say that in Peru, we had quite a little difficulty about the sisters having head coverings. Because in Peru, why, none of the Protestant women wear head coverings. Only the Catholics would do that. And we had to go over that several times with them to get them to understand it and to feel exercised about doing it, which they finally did. Well, from there we went back to the railway station with the truck, and then went back to UNE. Well, then when we got back there, we attempted to cross the salt bed. They have a famous salt bed in there where they harvest salt, just about something like the farmers used to harvest ice in these sections in the wintertime. Only there don't seem to be any water there, but this salt sort of oozes up and solidifies, and they cut it out in chunks. Well, we started to, there's some meetings over in here on the other side of that salt bed. Well, when it's dry weather, why, that's pretty not fair road. So we started to cross. We hadn't got to it yet, and there was sort of a gravel road. Well, here you'd see a big hole about as big as a barrel alongside, and one over on that side. Don't know what made those, whether somebody got off end or not. But we were in the Jeep, and we got mired down a couple of times, and finally the Lino Bueno, who was with us, he said, "Well, we'd better go back." He says, "It's going to get worse as we go on." Well, I don't doubt but what it was of the Lord that we didn't go. Well, as much as we'd like to see the brethren, and they were expecting us. But if we had gotten over there, the rains come on worse after that, and we'd probably been stuck over there for a couple of months. So we came back. And then we took the train up to a section right there where the branch goes off to La Paz. That's Rio Marquez. Well, that was on the 1st of January. We had a few meetings there. Well, they had a little meeting room there with made of adobe brick, dirt floor, and cactus poles in the roof, in the thatch roof. And I'll say this, that I thought the thatch roof seemed to shed the water better than when they tried to use tile or tin. And we were there. Well, there were some from the surrounding meetings came there, walked several miles. And some of them evidently thought it'd be nice, and they carried a dressed sheep. All that distance down there, they wanted to give that to us, Jimmy and I. Well, we had this Brother Leano Bueno with us, And he had asked us when we were in Uinni to come to his house to get the meals. We went there for noon meal and evening meal. And so we turned it over to him, and he took it home. And then the women folk wanted to know if they could use it, cut it up and use it in soup. Said it'd go farther that way. So we told them they could. Well, those little things show something of the poverty conditions in that country. This brother has a son-in-law who teaches school. He's a man, I think he has three children, and he got the sum of $12 a month for that teaching. Of course, in Bolivianas, that would probably be $150,000. But they don't go as far as they sound, though. So most of those people do have some sheep or goats or chickens or pigs or something of that kind to try to make out their living. Well, we had some nice meetings there among those Indian brethren. And I would say that Eric Smith had told us, in going among these Indians, he said when he went into one of their huts and they offered him a chair and there was a sheepskin or something like that on the seat of it, he says, I just didn't sit down. Because there, he said, there was certain lice there that would bring on typhus. Well, we, in our checking into the requirements for going to South America, they told us that the government only required smallpox vaccination. That they would recommend, though, typhus shots and typhoid shots. So I had them. Well, this very first place, they took us to, we had sleeping bags, Jimmy and I. They took us to a little hut that wasn't used anymore, and there was where we were to sleep. Well, the Indian brothers come in, and here they spread some sheepskins down the floor, and we were to put our mattresses on those. Well, we couldn't very well throw them away, and so we put our sleeping bags down on them. And then when I got into my sleeping bag, well, here one of these Indian brothers come, and he spread a blanket over me. Well, he was doing the best he could, and I was thankful for the blanket. Well, the Lord preserved us, took care of us. There were some things there in the way of insects, things of that kind that bothered us in Lima, in those outlying sections where they didn't have any storage or sanitary conditions. There was an awful lot of fleas, and all over Lima there were fleas. Well, some of the people sprayed for them and some didn't. So sometimes when you'd go to some of these meetings, you would come back with quite a number of flea bites that get in under your clothes. Then there was another place that place I'm telling you where Eric used to live. They had a bug there that was about like a cockroach. And it had a beak on it that was so sharp that they said it would get on you in the night and you wouldn't feel that beak when it went into you. And he sucked blood out. Oh, if you smashed one in the morning, it left a spot about as big as a half a dollar. Well, it didn't leave any mark. And as far as I know, it had no effect other than that. It is a very hard country to live in. And I remarked to my son, I said, well, I didn't think there was any place for a white woman to go down there. Well, Jimmy wouldn't allow his wife to go down there. He made her stay in Lima. And we were both thankful she didn't come. So it is very trying, and I would say that as far as a young person going down there, well, the only way they should go would be to be with an older person, because as far as the gospel is concerned, those native brothers, very good at it. They have a good deal of respect for age, but not so much otherwise. Well, they marveled at me, they said I was the oldest brother they'd ever seen. And my letter said that I'd been in fellowship 57 years, and they just couldn't understand that. So they did show me quite a little difference. Well, from Rio Marquez, we went back to UNE, and then we went in the Jeep to another place, Silicola, over in there, and that was across the desert. Well, we had a little trouble there. Those deserts look like very similar to ours out in Wyoming, except they don't have the same kind of vegetation. They have a weed they call the tolka weed, which is similar to what grows out in Wyoming, only not quite so thick. They use it for firewood down there and make charcoal out of it. Well, we'd go across a couple of tracks through that desert, and your worst difficulty was when you come to where there was a stream in the rainy season. Why, you might get mired down. It seemed to pack down pretty well, though, after rain. Went over there. Well, it was raining. Well, the brethren had given us up. They thought that we wouldn't be able to get there during the rain. So they weren't expecting us, but they have some bicycles, and they can ride bicycles through the paths through the desert that the animals make. And so one brother went out in the rain with his bicycle, and he got together a few people. They came together that night for a meeting, and there was more the next day. So we stayed over the Lord's Day with them and had some meetings. Well, there one sister, she felt very evidently very kindly disposed toward us. When we left, she gave us 7 eggs. And, well, we were thankful. They said they were doing the best they could for us. And they seemed to appreciate our being there. On our way over there, in the Jeep, while we were passing a mine where it was a silver and lead and tin mine, and the government was abandoning it, but they still had some men working there, and we were quite surprised. We came to a place where they had something like a toll gate across the road. We got there, why, they had a telephone call for Jimmy Smith. So he went to the call and answered the phone, and there was a town not far away from there that they wanted us to stop on our way back. There was a young brother there that Jimmy had met in UNE, and he was asking questions about the ground of gathering. So on our way back, why, we stopped there and went over there, and they had lunch for us, and we had a little reading for them in the afternoon before we started back again. Well, then we went to back to UNE, and then to a neighboring town in there, Aracocha. Well, there were a few brethren there that come from some of the surrounding districts, and well, we had a few meetings. We stayed there a couple of days over the Lord's Day, and the conditions there were very primitive. It had rained so much that they did have some wells, but they were all flooded with this dirty yellow water from the hills and the mountains. And we could see those people going off hunting these puddles where they could get some water to use for the cooking. And we noticed they had, generally have separate kitchens. They're detached from the house. I suppose it may be on account of danger of fire, on account of the thatch roof. They don't have chimneys. They just have an open table of rocks or something of that kind to use for fireplace. Well, here, on account of the conference, they evidently had a few of pots and things outside where they were doing cooking. Well, we had some nice meetings there, and there was a brother that drove us over there. He was not in fellowship, He'd been rather confused, but he drove us over there. He drove the Jeep. And, well, he lived there in that town of Uinni, and he wanted to remember the Lord. So they allowed him to remember the Lord. He seemed to be very well settled in his thoughts then. He said that he felt that that was where he should be. Well, he'd had a good deal of contention to in his home life. His wife's father was very much opposed, but both he and she were anxious to take the step. Well, then we went back to Uinni again, and we took the train to point down in here, and there we, a brother met us with a truck, and he took us over the mountains to another mining settlement. And we had some meetings there. Well, it was very, very nice. These people were all the Indian people, and our hostess that waited on the table where we stayed, while she had a baby strapped on her back while she was waiting on the table, because that's the way they carry them down there. And, well, the water there looked very clear and nice, and they told us it was very good water, the natives did. But we talked to a brother who worked in the, who was a pharmacist, worked there at the mine. He says, well, there are no microbes in it, but there's plenty of lead, though. So that was what we had there. Well, we stayed there, and then a brother, he engaged the truck that took us over the mountains to another center. And we had some meetings there. Well, the brethren, that was a Tocho. And we were very well impressed with the brethren at that place. They seemed to have a real desire to go on to the Lord. And they asked us quite a few questions. And there were some things that troubled them. There are some down there that are trying their best to break up the little testimony the Lord has raised up. Some who are professedly and profess to be on the same ground, they do their best to get into a meeting of ours and try to indoctrinate it and then say it's their meeting. And they were disturbed about it. They said some of these brothers come there and say, we're members of the body of Christ and we're servants of the Lord. You got no right to refuse us. Well, we told them that it wasn't simply the ground of fellowship, wasn't simply a fact to remember the body of Christ, but it was the walk, and what you held had a lot to do with it, as whether they could be accepted as to remember the Lord or not. And they should ask them for four letters, and they should know where those letters came from. Well, they wanted to know what to do about it. Well, we told them, well, it'd be a good plan if you put out a letter stating your stand on it so the other brethren in other places would know about it. So they've agreed to do that, and I understand they have. Well, at this place, I was rather amused. The railroad conditions down there are very crowded, and they're very slow. I don't think the trains ever get up over 30 miles an hour, and their average is about 12, 15. They stop a long time at the stations because they're so terribly crowded that it takes a long time for people to get on and off. And so our brother, Leon Obueno, he'd gone down there with us, and he was going back to Uinni. He's going to take the train. We were going to take the train going farther south the next day. But he was taking the train that night. Well, he had the gospel meeting. And, of course, those people say they know their trains. And he preached that night till he heard the train whistle. And then he quit. And he took his time saying goodbye to the brethren. And he walked down to the station, got his train plenty of time. Well, from there, we went on to the town of Nazareno, which is in southern Bolivia. That is about there. And we met our brother Filimon Garnica. Well, he is one that Eric had recommended as being out in the Lord's work. And his brethren have commended him. He labors in the gospel, seemed to have a nice care for the saints. He had labored around in that section. And there were several little centers there, and some of these brethren came to the meetings. Well, Philemon seemed to have a nice disposition. You wouldn't look upon him as a brother that had very bold characteristics about him. Yet there were some things that he had done that I couldn't help but admire him for it. When the present regime came into power down there, the president had been in power now about 8 years, which is very unusual for Bolivia, because before that they'd never been able to stay in power 1 year. They averaged more than one revolution a year in their history. Well, this president was coming to a nearby town, I don't know just where it was, and they were going to have a public review, something of that kind. So this brother thought he would like to give the president a Bible. So he went up there, and they had a grandstand. The president and other dignitaries were on that grandstand. Well, as he went up the grandstand, why, the soldier who was standing guard at the stairway was an old friend of his. And so he allowed him to go up on the platform. So he went up on the platform and he presented the president with a Bible. Well, in Bolivia, the way they greet you, they first shake hands, and then they throw their arms around you and hug you, and then when you break away, you shake hands again. Well, the president treated him that way and thanked him very kindly for the Bible. Well, there was a Catholic bishop on that platform, too, and he was incensed about to think that at Nazareno they would choose a Protestant, go up there and present a Bible to the president. Well, the village of Nazareno had nothing to do with it. It was this brother's exercise. Well, then there was another incident that I thought was very nice. This brother had labored in a neighboring town, and there was some blessing in the gospel, and they were some converted, and they were real, and they testified. Well, they were thrown into jail. Well, in Bolivia, the Constitution allows them a religious liberty. But, of course, all the authorities in the small towns don't know what the Constitution says, just as like in this country. Why, who knows what the Constitution says? And while the Church of Rome probably knows it only too well, they also know that very few know about it. And so if they can get away with something, they're going to do it. So the priest had these brothers thrown in jail. Well, Philemon, he knew about it and or heard about it. And so he went up there and he convinced the authorities that they had religious liberty according to the Constitution, and so they let the men loose. Well, I thought that was very nice. Say, he didn't seem like a brother, one of these kinds, he just forced his way anywhere, but he seemed to be a very quiet sort of a person going on. Well, he went around with Jimmy and I for a while, and then we went on down to the border town of Villazon. Well, at Villazon, there was not the breaking of bread, but there were four brothers there that had been meeting together for a year. The ex-priest Ferrero had been there, and there seemingly was a work there, but it all went to pieces except these four. But one of these was an ex-governor of that lower section of Potosi. The various departments are divided up into certain sections, something like our counties, only I think they're much bigger. And this man had been a governor of that district. Well, he and the four of them, one of the brothers there was the gardener. Well, in those towns, they always have a square block. It's a park, and there'd be a church on one side and the government buildings and police buildings on the other side. And he kept the weeds and the grass cut in that park. That was his job. Then there was another brother who was a shoemaker. And then there was another one who was a tailor. Well, those four met in a little room that wasn't any bigger than this platform, but maybe 10 by 12, something like that. They've been going on that way for a year. Well, you could tell from meeting this ex-governor, he was a man of ability. Well, at that time, he's collector of the internal revenue in that section. And to see him going on with those people in low degree, I thought it was very nice. Eric had met this man several years before. There was one time, might tell another attack on Eric, that a man came to Eric's house one in the middle of the night and awakened him and told him, says, Eric, you got to get out of here. They're coming to kill you. That the priest had got some Indians drunken, and they're coming to kill you. He says, I'm risking my life to tell you. So Eric got out. He had a truck that time, one of the trucks which had been sent down there from here. And he got in that truck. Well, he had to pass through this road that went through a riverbed. I was over the same district. And they were going along here. They met this bunch of Indians coming. Well, Eric put on his bright lights and went as fast as he could. And the Indians recognized him, but they didn't throw a stone. It was very easy to recognize him because there's not many trucks down there, so any man who had a truck was well known. So Eric went on, and then early in the morning, he came to a brother's house, and he roused him, and he says, Eric, what are you doing here? Well, he told him how that these Indians were coming to kill him, and he was warned of it, and so he was fleeing. Well, this man says, I'll have to tell the governor about that. He was a local sheriff. As I understand down there, they appoint different ones a sheriff, so you're a sheriff. Well, they don't carry arms or anything of that kind, but they do have to report things to governor. So he says, I have to report that to governor. Oh, he says, I don't want you to do that. Well, yes, I have to. So in the morning, why, they went to the governor. Well, they evidently knew who the Indians were because the governor sent out some officers and with a truck, and they rounded them up and brought them in there. And, well, the governor was going to make short work of it. He was going to sentence those men down into the jungles, down into the... on the other side of the Andes is the headwaters of the Amazon. There's jungles down there, and they say there's a very savage tribe of Indians down there. They say they're very big men. The average Inca Indian is rather short. And it meant if they went down there, they'd soon be killed by those savage Indians. Why... talking with some young men who had been in the army, and they'd been in the Chaco Indian War down there, and they had captured one of the bows that these Indians used. And he said it took three soldiers to pull that string back. Well, Eric pleaded with the governor, "Oh, don't do that. You turn them over to me. I'll be responsible for them." Well, the governor allowed it. So, Eric took those Indians back home in his own truck. Well, that made quite an impression on the governor. I don't know how much effect that had on the Indians, but it did make an impression on the governor, and Eric went to see him several times after that, and finally he professed to be saved. Well, I say, the way he went on with those lowly people I thought was very nice. He was anxious, he said, to get out of that Internal Revenue Department, says, "I'd rather not have any government office." He was trying to take on an agency for the International Harvester Company for a section down there, and I don't know whether he's since done it or not. Well, while we were there, they were some that had expressed desire for baptism. Now, in South America, they will not recognize a Catholic baptism. They say that it's not Christian baptism, and it has connected with it their forgiveness of the original sin. They simply will not recognize it. They demand that people be baptized over again. So while we were there, there were four of them that expressed baptism, a desire for being baptized. And so, Jimmy and I and the local Philemon, we had the remembrance of the Lord in our rooms that early morning. And then we had a meeting at this Brother Villegas, the ex-governor, rented a room over not far from the square, and we'd had some meetings in there. And we were to have a Sunday school and Bible reading in there. So we were to go there then in the forenoon, then they said at 1 o'clock, well, we'd meet there again for a trip out the river to have the baptism. Well, of course, most of the people down there don't have watches. And when they say 1 o'clock, why, it may mean an hour after that before they really get together. When you have an evening meeting and the time is given is 8 o'clock, it's generally 9 o'clock before they come together. Well, Jimmy Smith used to keep the people singing hymns, those that did come, until he got an audience. Well, we got back there at 1 o'clock, so we started to walk down the highway, and it evidently was quite a ways to go. But on the way down there, though, why, a truck overtook us, and this driver, he knew the ex-governor, and so he invited us all to get in his truck. So we got in his truck, and he took us on down to a river. I wondered where they're going to have it, because there's a river that divides Bolivia and Argentina, and they watch that river very close. I know one time I was there with Philemon, and we were walking down toward it, and he finally pulled me back. He pointed to the bridge up there. He says, "You can't go any farther." So we didn't go. Well, we found a branch of that river, and we were walking down it, wondering where the water didn't seem to be very deep. There was several sections in the river. You'd have a stream of water here, and then you'd have a sandbar, and then you have another stream farther over, so it wasn't very deep. But they had brought along a couple of shovels, and so we were walking down there, and finally we got to a point where the truck driver, he thought that as far as he wanted to go, so he pulled his truck over into the river and was starting washing his truck. But he was going to wait for us, though, so we walked on down a little farther, and so they built a dam, and they had the baptism there. Well, there were three of them. The two brothers and the wife of one of them were baptized. Well, the Vegas, the ex-governor, he kind of drew back. He was down there with us. He wanted to know if it couldn't be done a little more privately than that. And he asked Philemon if he couldn't come back. Well, I told Jimmy, and Jimmy told Philemon, I says, you know, sometimes when you want those things done privately, why, the Lord overrules in that. And I told about a case years ago in Kansas City. Some of the brethren here may know more about it than I do. Brother Armit was there. And there was one young sister there that she wanted to be baptized, but she wanted it privately. And so Brother Armit tried to arrange it that way. He got a permission in a hotel to go in and use, I suppose, something like a swimming pool for the baptism. Well, they were in there, and while they had the service, well, here a drunk man burst into the room, and he saw what was going on. He went out, and he started blazing it around, and a newspaper reporter got a hold of the story, and he put it in the paper. So the sister had people calling her up and asking her about it. So I don't know whether he has been baptized or not, but I trust he will. He seemed to have a real desire to go along. For instance, we had some meetings across the river in Argentine, and he went before the police authorities and got his permits because they were very suspicious of anything like a group of men coming across that border from Argentine, because in times past, when this present regime came in power, many of the old army men fled to Argentine, and they were terribly afraid that they would lead an invasion and come in there and overthrow the government, so they were watched very close. But Vigas went to the police headquarters. They were a little surprised that he would come and want to take a group of evangelicals over there, but he did. So he got permission for us, had our names all down on a sheet of paper so that we wouldn't have to stop and go through a long process to get across. So he did that for us. Well, we went on down then to Jujuy, Argentine. That was where Ferrero was. We wanted to contact him. There were three of us, Philemon, Jimmy, and I. We found him away. We found that he hadn't been altogether straight with Eric, and he belonged to an organization called the New Testament Union, Missionary Union. Well, he was off on some trip. Well, the neighbors told us that they thought he'd be back. Well, Jimmy and Philemon wanted to go over into this northern province of Argentine to look up a contact there that Jimmy had correspondence with in connection with the Spanish work. He showed exercise. So they told me to get on the train here, an international train, go back up to the capital and go on to Lima, and Jimmy would join me about a week later. Well, so they went on. Well, they met Ferrero coming back, and they asked him, well, did you tell Eric about belonging to this union? No, he says, he didn't ask me. Well, we found another thing that he had some meetings there, and they'd had a collection they'd taken up some collections, and he was in charge of it, and when he went into Argentina, took it with him. Well, the local brethren there told us about it, and we asked Vigas what he knew about. Well, he says, I don't know anything about that, but he says, we'll write him a letter. And he says, Jimmy, you see that he gets it. I'd rather you take it than send it through the mail, because the mails down there are terrible. They, both in Bolivia, Argentine, Brazil, I know one of the steamship officials told me that the mails were bad in Argentina, but they're worse in Brazil. Well, he confessed he took it with him, but he didn't know who to turn it over to. Well, it was only about $25 or $30, but of course it sounded big in Bolivianas. So he gave it back to Jimmy. And, well, in the meantime, I was supposed to take a train here. It was an overnight trip from the Jujuy to the border. And I was supposed to get a connection through, but I had to lay over 2 days in Villazon and before I could get a connecting train. Well, not knowing Spanish very well, I got along very well, though. The Lord provided someone when I got stuck to help me out. I know when I was crossing the border, why, the official there was trying to ask me some questions, and I couldn't make out just what he was saying, and a woman right next to me, she spoke up, says, "He wants to know if you're married." So I was able to tell him. Well, in down in there in your travels, they have the sleeping car divided up in compartments. But you don't get a compartment, you get a berth. So you don't know who you're going to be with in your compartment. Well, they gave me a man who was in charge of a school in Argentine, and he was in charge of a party that were going up quite a trip through South America, and he spoke some English, and he said he was glad to have somebody spoke English because he needed some practice. So I got along very well with him. He professed to know the Lord. There was some in the party that didn't, and in fact he spoke to me about it, and I had some conversations with one fellow in particular. Oh, he was very much of a, said he believed in God, but he criticized everything in this world and blamed it on God. So we got on a train there, but we couldn't get into our Pullman. Well, Brother Villegas came down there to see me off. I wondered whether any of the brethren would, because I had met them as I got back there the second time. I went down through the park and I met them. But he came there, and so we were all packed in on the train. I saw him coming, and he motioned me to get off. We got off, and we were walking the platform. He took me up to the station chief and tried to do something for me, but the station chief says there's a washout in here, and you can't do anything till you get past that. So we just had to get packed in there, and we were certainly wedged in tight. Well, my roommate, he got off, and I met him on the platform with Villegas, and I introduced him. So when we got back on the train, why, he told me that Villegas had told him, "Now, this man needs some special attention because he's not as young as he used to be." So he was very kind to me. Well, we had to walk a mile and a half around the washout. Well, they had some Indian porters there that carried our bags for us. And then when we got to the train on the other side, we had to go to this town, Tupisa, to pick up the Pullman. Well, when we got all in the Pullman, we got our reservations all right. Well, we found the Pullman didn't leave till 7 o'clock the next morning. So it took me 6 days to go about 1,000 miles up to there. And at one of the stations, I got off and the train stopped. Well, I was quite surprised. Here was one of the brothers who we'd met where we'd had the meetings. He came up and spoke to me. And he was inquiring about Jimmy Smith. Well, I, by the aid of a map and all, I was able to show him where Jimmy was in Argentina. But we found much to there was much to encourage. There were some things that were caused a good deal of exercise. Well, when we got back to Lima, why, we started on with the meetings, had some more of the meetings, reading meetings in the morning, and it was then that we started remembering the Lord with the native brethren, with the help of the brother from Potosí. And there was one brother there that we felt much drawn to, but he had been He said he'd been converted 37 years. My time is up. I would like to tell this, though. And he had been converted by an ex-Catholic priest. This man met our brother Roche as a young man, and he didn't know Spanish, and Roche didn't know English. Well, this priest had been educated in Ireland for the priesthood, and he'd gotten to the point where they allowed him to hear confessions. Well, one day there was a woman came in and told such an awful story that it just so completely disgusted him that he would have to pass on such a thing as that, he just went home and told his parents he was through. He took off his clerical robes and hung them up. Well, he had a brother that was a bishop, or an uncle that was a bishop, and the uncle, they sent for him. He says, "Oh, you'll hear lots worse things than that, and get as old as I am." But he stuck to his story. He wouldn't go on. Well, the family cast him out without anything. Well, he wandered from one thing to another, and he eventually landed in this country. Well, one time in the city of Brooklyn, he got to the point where he's going to destroy himself. He was walking down the streets of Brooklyn one night, and he heard some singing from an upstairs room. And what he heard was, "Happy day when Jesus washed my sins away." Well, he thought that struck him very forcibly. He thought he would go up there and investigate. So he went up there and he got saved. Well, how he got to Peru, I don't know. But he met this young man, and they would compare passages between the Spanish and the English Bibles, and this young man got converted. And they managed to teach each other something of the language in so doing. He didn't live, the priest didn't live much more than a year after that. Eric told me he used to correspond with him. And he said he wrote him one time, he says, "They're trying to get me. I detected some poison in my coffee one time." But Eric says, "I'm afraid he didn't detect it the next time." So he didn't live much longer than that. Well, this man, he drilled into this man, Roche, how that sectarianism was wrong. And he'd never identified himself with anything. He had a home where he built a room for holding Sunday school and gospel meetings. And he'd been going on that way for years. He'd been resisting. He'd been quite a fighter. But, of course, sometimes when a person's a fighter, it's very hard for them to sit down and just be one of the brethren. But I was amused at him, the way he conducted his Sunday school. The children seemed to respect him, but he was a man for discipline, though. And he had a big, long stick. And if he saw some of those children unruly, why, he'd get that stick in his hands. And, well, generally, that is enough to bring order to see him get the stick. But sometimes, though, he would reach out and he would tap somebody on the head with it. Well, that seemed to be effective. Well, it is really remarkable that the children liked him and still came to him. Well, on that return trip, there were some there that wanted to be baptized. And so his wife was one. Well, he wanted Jimmy to do that. Well, Jimmy preferred to have the natives do the baptizing, and I think he was wise. So he told this brother it was all right for him to baptize his wife. We'll be witnesses. So, again, we had to walk down a river, and we finally found a pool that looked like had pretty clear water in it. So there they had the baptism. And I believe there were 6 or 7 women were baptized that time. Well, some of them have expressed desire to remember the Lord, but Roche is just a little hesitancy. He does help Jimmy some in his translating work. Jimmy says he has a very good head on catching phrases that are not what they would normally use there. So he has helped Jimmy, and Brother Valderrama has helped him. So it looks like there is a little work there in Peru. I'll say that I think Jimmy, denies himself a lot, and he goes and lives among those people. He had hoped to go down into Chile. He thought Eric was coming to Lima first, and then Jimmy was going to leave and go down into Chile. But Eric instead, he wanted to take a gradual ascent to the higher altitudes, and he was going from Buenos Aires and come up gradually. Well, seems to me we can see that it's of the Lord that Jimmy didn't take his trip at that time down in Chile on account of those terrible earthquakes and tidal waves and volcanoes erupting. It's no doubt the Lord speaking. There were some there in Chile, some sailors who they got to come to some of the meetings in Brooklyn. They had some Spanish meetings for them, and they professed conversion. So Jimmy had in mind to go down and contact them.